Hello and welcome to episode 38 of Can We Still Be Friends, the podcast that tests the limits of the friendship between two people who mistake movie taste for personal morality. I'm Nate Goss, here with Ryan Ebling. Writer and actor Sacha Baron Cohen is back with a new comedy, The Brothers Grimsby, in which he disappears into another unique character he's created. For this episode, we are rewatching the 2006 big screen debut of another one of his iconic characters, Borat. While we've both been fans of Sacha Baron Cohen, we've never really spent time thinking about what it is he is trying to do with his characters and his movies. With Borat celebrating its 10th anniversary, we thought there was no time like the present to revisit one of his most enduring creations.
Borat, which the full title of the movie is Borat Cultural Learnings of America for Make Benefit Glorious Nation of Kazakhstan.
You had that memorized.
I did.
Well done.
Well, I have it tattooed.
Oh, of course.
I was reading it, but I haven't memorized.
Of course.
Just a backup. The movie was a huge hit in the States upon its release. Critics loved it, with Roger Ebert calling it the funniest movie in years, and Mick LaSalle of the San Francisco Chronicle calling Baron Cohen an original and significant comedy intelligence. The film even earned an Oscar nomination for Best Adapted Screenplay. The movie practically became a cultural phenomenon, with people from all walks of life quoting Borat's myriad catchphrases.
But is Borat the brilliant comedic vision the critics claim it was?
Or is Baron Cohen's shtick just button-pushing nonsense? A jackass for the NPR crowd, if you will. Keep listening.
Yakshimash! My name is Borat. I like you. I like sex. It's nice. This is my country of Kazakhstan. It locates between Tajikistan and Kyrgyzstan and assholes, Uzbekistan. This my town of Kusak. This are Orkin, the town rapist. Naughty, naughty. Over here, our town of kindergarten. And here, live a Mukhtar Sakhanov, a town mechanic and abortionist. This my house, entry, please.
So that was, of course, Sacha Baron Cohen as Borat introducing the camera in his documentary to the people in his neighborhood and around his town.
In the country of Kazakhstan.
Yeah. I don't know.
He hasn't quite crossed the pond yet.
Right. He's still in Kazakhstan. The movie opens with him in Kazakhstan. The concept of the movie is that Borat is sent by Kazakhstan to the United States to learn how to be a better country.
Mm-hmm. That's a great summary.
Thank you.
if you're, you know, maybe the one or two people listening who haven't already seen it back in 10 years ago.
10 years ago,
2006. It does not feel like 10 years ago.
No, it doesn't.
To me, at least.
No.
10 years, that's a decade. Literally
by
10
some
years,
accounts,
yes.
Yeah. And I think another thing that makes it feel like it hasn't been that long is that the movie feels pretty relevant.
I think that's definitely one of the reasons we wanted to talk about it, not just the fact that it was 10 years ago and not just the fact
right.
that Sacha Baron Cohen has another movie, but because we are in a very interesting political climate.
Yeah.
Interesting is a good word for it.
Well, and we both listened to the interview on WTF where Mark mm-hmm. Maron interviewed Sacha Baron Cohen, and he was more open about the movie than I think anybody had ever heard him be. One of the things that he wanted to do with his comedy, with Ali G, with Borat, with Bruno, was really kind of get at people's underlying
presumptions.
Yeah. In a very odd way, by putting them in a situation where they have to be extremely polite
right.
to somebody who is confirming any prejudices
yeah.
they have.
And that podcast episode, I don't think either one of us could recommend it enough, just because
right.
even if you're not a fan of Sacha Baron Cohen's work or of him, what you know of him, I think that what you'll get from that interview is a really interesting discussion actually on comedic styles and
right.
different philosophies of comedy. He's a historian
of comedy
yeah.
in a way. Yeah, everything he does, that's something that was really interesting about that interview, was that he's not just trying to figure out how to bug people.
Mm-hmm.
He has a thesis statement.
Yeah. So that's kind of some of the background of why we chose the episode. And I think it is interesting from a lot of critics, you were hearing that Borat is sort of shining a light on a certain segment of the American population. Mm-hmm. And I think right now, with the politics that's going on, we are again trying to shine a light on what is America? What does America value? What type of demographics exist in this country? And it really did feel like now was the right time to watch Borat.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. So let's talk about watching it back in 2006. That's when I saw it. Is that when you saw it?
I saw it in the theater.
Yeah, me too.
I don't know about you. I'm pretty sure, because we've talked in the past, that both of us were actually familiar with the Borat character before seeing it in the theater, because I think we were both fans of the Ali G show.
Very much so.
And Borat was a character, a recurring character on that show.
Yeah, I watched the TV show over and over and over again in college. I was excited to see Borat.
Yeah.
Yeah, and what'd you think?
I thought it was hilarious when I saw it. Now, personally, I think Ali G is actually my favorite character. I think that
I
Sacha
agree.
Baron
yeah.
Cohen does. Mm-hmm. And I remember thinking, I wish he would do that movie, which I think maybe he did, but I don't even know if I saw it.
Oh.
Wasn't there a movie with Ali
yeah.
G?
Oh, it's so bad.
Is it bad?
It's a scripted movie. Like,
it's not doing
no.
the improvisation, catching
no.
people off guard.
It's pretty
type
much
thing.
It's pretty much if Ali G was allowed to make his movie.
Didn't he do that in the show with that James Bond?
It's along those lines, yeah. It's pretty much like that.
Okay.
But it's not very funny.
All right.
Ali G in the house is what it's
okay.
called.
I do remember before going to the theater, wondering if he could pull off a full-length movie.
That was my concern, too.
Because it seemed to work best as sketch comedy, or as little mm-hmm. drawn-out ideas that work better in segments, not
yep.
so much something that would keep your attention for an entire full-length film.
Right.
So I guess I was just kind of pleasantly surprised that it actually was able to be pulled off and had this experience that that you don't get with the television show, at least not in the ways I watched it, of being in an entire theater full of people
right.
watching this unfold for the first time in front of them
yeah.
and just laughing hysterically. I mean, that theater, I just remember just uproarious.
It was crazy
laughing going on in that theater. Yeah. And I think some people were just being exposed to this style Sacha Baron Cohen's style of comedy for the
yeah,
first time. And
so
it was
too.
A really fun theater experience. That's my memory of it.
Yeah.
How about you?
No, I definitely agree. I'm with you. I loved the show. And yeah, Borat was funny, but I was like, how is this going to be a full movie?
Mm-hmm.
And I was pleasantly surprised that they did a great job of keeping that sketch feel, keeping the things about Borat that are so great. But then they were able to pretty satisfactorily
patched together a movie out
movie.
Of it.
Yeah. But yeah, just the anarchy of this movie
mm-hmm.
came through fully. And in the theater, you had people, you had everything. You had people just disgusted by
mm-hmm.
it. You had people who had never seen anything so funny. You were seeing people who were like, I don't want to laugh at this, but I can't help it.
I saw so many people were like turning away in certain
mm-hmm.
scenes, you know.
The energy of it, the movie just like crackles. It's crazy
yeah.
how alive you feel watching it.
Right. The other thing that I remember, and you can tell me if you had this experience too, but I remember not too long after that movie, the backlash started to settle in. The early adopters were getting mad that everybody loved this now.
Yeah.
And then you did have, like, I mean, I actually had at my workplace the person who loved doing the Borat impression.
Oh my gosh. Those people were everywhere.
They were everywhere. Those people were everywhere.
The high five and my wife.
My wife, yeah. Just like it was everywhere. And they just, and that person thought it was so funny for so
right.
long.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like that sort of fed into this thing that made it mm-hmm. so not a lot of people, I don't think, really went back and watched Borat all
no,
that
much. I mean, I didn't.
Even when the DVD came out, I don't think I watched it again. I think
no,
I saw it
no,
in the
no,
theater,
no, no.
and
I
that was
either.
It, you know.
And I never was like, oh, I need to own that one or anything. I think it felt so of its time. It really did.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it felt like it was going to be that summer and then move on.
Right. And then, you know, we know Bruno did come out.
Right.
And I saw Bruno and
I did too.
Enjoyed it.
I didn't
it.
Like Bruno that much.
Yeah, it was it kind of fizzed out a little bit,
I
feel
think
like.
So.
It didn't have nearly the cultural impact at all that Borat did.
See, I maybe I'm remembering it too with too much bias towards myself, I don't think I had backlash. Like, I don't think I was like, oh, Borat, that's a stupid character. But I did get fatigued.
Yeah.
There was some snobbery to it. Like, you haven't even seen the show.
Yeah.
And you're saying high
or
five.
Or you even
like,
really get
yeah,
it.
Yeah. You know? That's not what's funny about the movie. Like, but that brings me to my Letterboxd rating.
Okay. Yeah. Let's talk about that.
Which.
This is your rating from when you first watched it.
Well, this is my rating from when I first did Letterboxd.
Okay.
And I think I was rating it based on my fatigue because I rated it 3 stars.
Mm-hmm.
Which is surprisingly low to me.
Because that's not your memory of your experience in the theater.
Right. I think I was rating it more like in conjunction with Bruno.
Kind of like meshing together Sacha Baron Cohen's thing
into
one idea that's Borat, 3 stars for you when you set up your Letterboxd account.
Yes.
And for me, I think I actually forgot to check my Letterboxd, but I'm almost positive I gave it 4 stars.
Uh-huh.
And I think it was trying to keep in mind how I actually did feel about it when I first watched it.
So did you re-rate it?
I did.
Or would you?
Yeah, I haven't yet, but I will.
All right.
I'm having a hard time with this one,
okay,
to be honest.
Okay.
I certainly laughed a lot watching it again. So I think a lot of the humor holds up pretty well, I think.
Yeah.
Certain scenes, 5 stars. Certain scenes are just absolutely incredible.
That's a good
in this
point.
Movie.
Yeah.
Overall, I think I'm going to put it at 3 stars. And I don't know how I feel about that, but I guess that's why we're here, is to talk about that. But I think I'm going to put it at 3 stars. There are one or two things that kind of trouble me about the movie.
Okay. I'm with you, actually. I think that there are moments that hold up against anything you could ever show me. And there are just things that lull at best and are problematic at worst.
Hmm. Let's jump into it then.
Okay.
Why don't we start with the good?
Okay.
What do you think about the movie, whether it's more general or specific, holds up really well?
What holds
up... Or makes it even timeless at this point, that we can look back 10 years later and say, this really does deserve to be part of, you know, our conversation of comedy or of, you know, film or whatever.
For me, and this might sound simplistic, the thing that just continually awes me about this movie is Sacha Baron Cohen's performance.
Mm-hmm. Unflinching.
The commitment.
Yes.
The complete immersion. He got nominated for a Golden Globe for actor in a comedy. I think he deserved an Oscar nomination for his acting in this. Mm-hmm. It's unbelievable. Down to the detail where he has the look on his face of somebody who does not fully understand what people are saying to them.
Yep.
If he doesn't have that look, I don't think the people in the scenes buy it as much.
Right.
But there is a look on his face, a delayed nod, when he's just like, he can tell they're done with their sentence, so he nods like he understands. He gives no indication at any point in what people are saying to him that he understands.
Yeah.
He reacts to the end of their sentence.
Yes.
And that's it. Like, his performance
is absolutely correct. And
unbelievable.
And it's a comedy performance, even in the timing.
Yes.
There, I mean, you're absolutely right about the immersion of the character. The reason I think he pulls off some of these stunts is just because people, I don't think they could believe someone could pull it off that well.
Right.
This guy has to be real.
There's no way this guy is
faking
this.
As ridiculous as this guy is, he's got to be real because he just seems so real.
Right.
But then you also have where he's able to, in a very sort of improv sketch comedy kind of way, work off these people to pull out comedic timing out of
that.
These people don't even know they're part of a sketch.
Right.
And he's able to kind of play with the way that they're delivering the lines and deliver his lines with the correct timing to get the right laughs from the audience.
Yeah.
You know, it's incredible.
It's unreal.
What is a not joke?
A not joke is when we're trying to make fun of something. And what we do is we make a statement that we pretend is true, but at the end we say not, which means it's not true.
So teach me how to make one.
All right. What color is your suit?
This suit is gray.
Gray. I would call it blue, okay?
It's gray.
All right, it's blue-gray, but it's certainly not black,
gray.
Right? All right. Let's say it's gray, but it's
it
not...
It is gray.
Okay, so a not joke was, I would say, that suit is black. Not.
This suit is not black.
No, not has to be the end.
Okay.
Okay.
This suit is black, not.
This suit is black. Pause. You know what a pause is?
Yes.
This suit is black. Not.
This suit is black. Pause not.
No, you don't say pause. This suit is black. That's a pause. Not.
This suit is black.
Okay.
The other thing that I think is timeless is those scenes where he is flying without a net. There's so much energy. You're cringing. You're like, you can't believe he's still doing it. You don't know what is going to happen. Yes. Even this time, even though I had seen it,
right.
I still felt my stomach dropping. Uh-huh. Just uh-huh. like, what is he going to do? Where is this going to go? It can't go. And then he almost always goes where you didn't expect it to. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it's like way worse than you ever expected. And sometimes he pulls back and you're like, oh, mm-hmm. I didn't see him going that direction either, yeah. but it still works. This word gets thrown around a lot, but the bravery of it, the guts it took
yeah.
to do this.
Mm-hmm.
And those scenes still carry.
When he's going towards something deeper. And I don't think he's always going towards something deeper.
Right.
And so that's where I feel mm-hmm. like...
I agree.
There are scenes where I'm like, what are you trying to do here, honestly?
Right.
And if I think about it too much, I'm like, I don't like what you're trying to do here, honestly. Mm. Maybe we should stick with the good.
Yeah, let's stick with the good for
now. I can appreciate not only the commitment from Sacha Baron Cohen, but also from just the project itself. Like if you get the DVD, it's got like the DVD burnt look. The yeah. menu has like...
The Cyrillic alphabet, that yeah. sort of thing. That, yeah, it looks photocopied. It looks... Uh-huh. And then the disc looks like some... It looks like a burned CD with just Borat written on yeah. it.
I think conceptually it was thought out to the finest detail. For it being kind of a splattering of like, this part's going to be scripted, this part's not going to be scripted, you know, it actually mm-hmm. does have a consistency to yeah. it. Larry Charles, who did a lot of work on Curb Your Enthusiasm, mm-hmm. I think you're definitely seeing that coming forth in Borat, and that's kind of what makes it work as a feature film.
Are there scenes that you still love?
Yes. And actually, second time around, that frat boy scene...
Gosh.
Blows me away even more
me
the
too.
Second time around.
Me
I don't
too.
Even think I fully got it the first time.
I don't think I did either.
There is so much to actually dig into with that
yes.
scene.
I know. That scene, okay.
For those of you who maybe who haven't yeah. seen it for a while, this is the scene where he's hitchhiking.
He's hitchhiking.
He gets pulled, he gets picked up by an RV of
three or four.
There's a driver, but I don't think you really ever see the driver.
Right.
But there's specifically three frat boys that he
from the University of South Carolina, and they just get drunk.
They get really drunk
in the back of this RV, and it is shocking.
Let me ask you this: Are women your slaves in Russia?
No. Do you have slaves here?
We
no
wish.
Slaves. No
we
slaves.
Wish. It is a shame.
And Borat.
Big
Borat.
Shame. Big shame.
It would be better country
there,
if...
There, yes,
yeah,
there
but
would
Borat,
be a better country. We should have slaves.
Our country, the minorities actually have more power.
Anyone that is minority has the upper hand. We have the Jews. We have anybody that's against the mainstream.
Do you want to see my new wife?
Yes.
It's my new wife.
It's shocking, but it goes from being super tense... to there being these moments of like weird compassion.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
There's also, this is also where Sacha Baron Cohen, being drunk, mind you, is able to pull off a performance of emotion in the character of Borat.
Uh-huh.
That's actually convincing.
Yep.
Where he's kind of heartbroken.
Right.
Because they basically, he's this whole time he's got this love thing with Pamela Anderson.
He's trying to find Pamela Anderson to marry her.
And these are the guys that break it to him that she's not a virgin.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, to him in this culture, at least their understanding of this culture, that's a very heartbreaking thing.
Yeah. And they try to like,
they try to comfort him.
But then part of the way they try to comfort him is talking about how women aren't worth it. I forget exactly what one of them says. David is the character, the human being who says like, you never call a girl back because you don't respect them. He's not saying like Borat, you don't do that. He's saying, you should never call a woman because
right.
no woman is worthy
right.
of the respect of getting a phone call.
Right. And that's actually beforehand. That's before they even get into the whole Pamela Anderson
oh, right.
conversation.
That's
like
Sorry.
One of the first things he says.
Yeah.
Like off the bat. That's
before
what he says.
Before he's even that drunk.
And then, but one of their ways of comforting him is to say, no girl's worth it.
Yeah, and then they also talk in that scene about how minorities have all the power.
And that you're actually disadvantaged if you're in the majority.
If you're white, yeah.
Yeah, and I have a feeling we'll probably even come back to that scene because there's just so much in it. Yeah. Oh. But one thing I do think is very memorable is the scene before that with the manager of the rodeo, Bobby Rowe.
Yeah, shave that dadgum mustache off so you're not so conspicuous. So you look like maybe an Italian. Or something.
Yes.
As far as from people looking at you. I see a lot of people and I think there's a dadgum Muslim. I wonder what kind of bomb he's got strapped to him.
Yes.
And you probably aren't a Muslim. Maybe that's not your
no,
religion.
No, I am but, a Kazakh. I yeah, follow but, the
but,
hawk.
But you look like one of them. This thing gets over with and when we win it and kick the butts over there.
Yes.
And all of them son of a bucks hanging from the gallows.
Yes.
By that time you will have proven yourself and they'll understand you'll be accepted.
Take
yeah.
care.
Yep.
That is a very memorable interview to me.
Yes.
And one that I think is important to have on film for
right.
a lot of reasons.
Right.
And not just because it makes him look like a bigot.
Right. I agree. That there's way more to that interview than
yeah.
just, look at this ridiculous Southerner.
Right.
And I think that that's the case for a lot of the movie. That
mm-hmm.
it's not, it never just is, look at these hicks.
No, I don't think, and I think that that is something maybe I remembered of it that mm-hmm. was not true.
Right. I still think the rodeo scene's amazing. I love...
The way the horse falls.
Yeah. That's just so... I don't know how that happened.
I don't know.
But the concept of it, what he's doing is great. Showing the easy escalation from pride in yourself and your country to bloodlust for anybody who isn't
yeah.
like you. And he does it very quickly with We Support Your War of Terror... talking about George Bush will bathe in the blood of every man, woman, and child
right,
in Iraq.
Right.
And like moving from right. like killing but, every terrorist to the president's going to bathe in the blood of all the people of Iraq.
But at least, and I give the movie credit for this, it does show people just being confused
right.
in that. You see people
I'm not sure about that. And then getting people to that point of America being the best and everybody needs to die, or talking about it, not getting people to like whipped up to a frenzy, but then... flipping it to singing a song about Kazakhstan being the greatest nation in the world.
Uh-huh.
And just how angry people were at that idea. And like another country can't think they're the greatest, but you guys can think you're the greatest. Plus it's just got the brilliant line of Kazakhstan is the greatest exporter of potassium. All other countries have inferior potassium. It's just, I love that.
Yeah.
Would be in a national anthem. Yeah, the rodeo scene is one of my favorites.
There are other scenes that I really like too, but I think we'll probably get into them as maybe we talk about some mm-hmm. of the people that are actually
yeah.
depicted in the movie. Do you have any scene that I didn't mention that really
yeah.
stands out to you?
I had forgotten about the local news segment that he does.
Oh yeah, I totally did too.
And it's so funny because, and what impresses me also about this movie, like I said, it goes places you don't expect it to. He's on local TV. And so he knows, Sacha Baron Cohen knows, he can't do some of the outrageous stuff.
Mm-hmm.
He couldn't get drunk. He couldn't
They'll just cut to commercial.
Do nudity, whatever.
Happens.
Right.
Yeah.
So he needed to do something that kept him on screen.
Yeah.
And just standing up when he shouldn't be standing up, acting like he didn't know they were rolling, not knowing the weatherman was doing
yeah.
his thing.
And I love that weatherman.
Just, yeah,
I love the fact that
he's giggling.
Just thought it was the funniest thing.
Yeah. yeah. But he's got to keep it, you know... And then directorially to move from the actual news broadcast, which was the weatherman trying to push him off screen and whatever, to showing just how close he was. Like he was just trying to like shake his hand. I don't know. It was just a great touch. But I didn't expect it to go there. It's one of those scenes where you're like, oh, what's he going to do? And then it's just funny. It's
right.
not really dangerous
right.
or risky.
I think you make a good point in that Sacha Baron Cohen knows when to take a scene and just do almost slapstick comedy.
Mm-hmm. Making someone react to him.
Yeah.
But it doesn't have to be something extreme to get a reaction.
He's
in a situation where the slightest step out of normal is going to get a reaction. So standing up when nobody in the history of local news has ever just stood up to continue the interview. Like, it's not like he was going anywhere. He just stood up and just kept talking.
Yeah. And I think he also, that takes a lot of insight to know that these people are probably professional enough to not make themselves look like total idiots. And really the joke's just going to be on him. I think in
yes.
that whole news
yes.
section,
mm-hmm.
the joke isn't on the anchors at all.
Right.
It is completely on Borat.
Exactly.
You know?
Another scene that surprised me in the way it went, but when it started unfolding, I was like, please no, please no, was when they go to the bed and breakfast and they realize the owners are Jewish. Because if you haven't seen the movie, Borat is terribly anti-Semitic.
Right.
Uninformed, clearly. And Sacha Baron Cohen is Jewish. Most of the movie, when he's speaking what's supposed to be the Kazakh language, he's speaking Hebrew. He wrote his, like, his final paper for university on the history of anti-Semitism in, like, the 20th century or mm-hmm. something like that. Yeah. Like, it's coming from a very informed place.
Right. Right.
And he's lampooning that, like, the propaganda of Nazi Germany and, like, any sort of outlandish, uninformed, ignorant, fear-based hatred. But so he goes to this house, and as soon as the guy opens the door wearing a yarmulke, you're like, no, please.
Did they have to do this? Yeah.
Right. But again, the joke isn't on those people.
No.
And so they bring him food.
Could they have found nicer, more courteous
people? No.
People? Providers of bed and breakfast.
Right. Although maybe you have to be like that if you're going to own a bed and breakfast.
Sure, I guess.
But I just thought it was really funny that he uses his performance for the comedy, not the people. So the hesitation in eating the sandwich and then like throwing money at the cockroaches, like the people weren't involved at all. And right. I don't know how it went. That's another thing about this movie. I kind of get pulled out of it wondering, like, okay, how did they really do this? Like, did they really just run out of the bed and breakfast and not tell the people what was going
right.
on or something, you
right.
know? But I was just surprised at how that went. So, but it didn't save the movie for you, those things.
I don't know. I'm still on the fence. I'll come down to one thing I'm still wrestling with. I'm not sure if it's accurate or not. But my impression in some of the scenes is that Sacha Baron Cohen will go however far he needs to go to get a laugh, even if it does once in a while devolve into just turning the person into the butt of a joke for no real good reason.
Okay.
And almost in a way that where the audience would be laughing at that person in a way mm-hmm. that's really unfair.
Mm-hmm.
And not just because they're putting their foot in their mouth. I'm more thinking of what Borat says to them once in a while. I'm thinking of they're both towards women. There's the scene where he goes and talks to the feminists.
Right.
Honestly, it's not really that funny.
No.
And I think he knows that. I think in the scene, he knows that maybe he's not quite getting what he wants out of these feminists.
Mm-hmm. They're not being polite to him.
Right.
That's when the scenes get traction, when people try to play along with him. And
yes.
they just won't. To their credit.
So what does he do to get the laugh at the punchline at the end of the scene? He does a voiceover narrative where he says, "I couldn't understand what this old man was saying." So that's really just kind of a cheap shot.
Mm-hmm.
At the person
right.
for no reason. If you're laughing at that, that's basically a bullying, like, you're ugly joke.
Yeah.
There's another scene, and I actually think overall the scene is very good because it is all about manners and being polite, mm-hmm. and it's the dinner scene. Mm-hmm. But there's the one part where he basically insults the pastor's wife.
Yes.
No, why?
That is not. Yeah.
Should I pay compliments to the peoples?
Yes, but only if you truly agree with that compliment.
You have a very gentle face and a very erotic physique.
Thank you. You're correct.
Yes.
That's a very good observation.
She is your wife?
Nope, that's my wife.
In my country, they would go crazy.
Oh, my.
For these two, not so much.
Yes.
Wow.
Why?
I don't know.
That is not.
I'm with you. I was like, come on.
And there's an earlier version of myself that would just laugh at that without even thinking twice.
Right.
And I guess, like, I could almost imagine the very frat boys that mm-hmm. he's sort of exposing in the RV mm-hmm. scene being the very type of person who would think that was hilarious.
Right. Yeah, I didn't get the point of that joke either. I mean, part of what's me is she is the plainest woman at the table.
Right.
Like, it's just...
And I think the intention there was to actually sort of get under the skin of the pastor,
right.
who was her husband.
Right.
He was already getting under his skin anyways. I don't know. I just... Well, my whole feeling there was like that poor woman.
The fact they kept it in, like, I can see him in the moment being like... I don't know why they thought it was a good idea to keep in.
Yeah.
I can forgive. He's just trying anything. At the time, but to keep it in the movie, I don't know. I'm with you. There are just times where it's like...
It just doesn't seem consistent.
Right.
It doesn't even seem consistent with what he's trying to do in the movie.
Right.
You know,
when he's got so much footage of bigots exposing themselves as bigots and other situations where people deserve maybe more of a critical eye,
mm-hmm.
to just pick women who aren't conventionally beautiful and make that the joke.
Right. They really do in those scenes. They really do become nothing more than victims.
I agree. That, I mean, I watched the movie with my wife and we both were like, oh, no, why would you do that?
Right.
I remember the first time I saw the feminist scene, the scene with the feminists in the theater, I remember being terrified as to where he would take it and actually thinking he was sort of restrained.
Which he is for the most part.
He is. But then I also think, like the whole telling her to smile thing, the more I've read feminist writings and the more like I've read things about rape culture and about how women are telling women to smile is such a male gaze oriented thing. And so when he was telling them to smile and they just weren't having it, I'm like, of course they're not. They shouldn't. He's not exposing anything there.
So, yeah. So I guess that's my question is, what do you, in those scenes, what is he trying to do? And is it just a matter of him trying to, and I hate, it sounds so like, I sound like the person who.
Like a killjoy?
Yeah, killjoy. Like, you just don't get it, or you're being too sensitive about this.
No,
but I feel like there's a difference in what he's doing in those scenes that is contrary to the really brilliant parts that he's doing in other scenes.
That's the thing. Because he's so thoughtful about everything he does, and the fact that it stayed in the movie. Like I said, says that stuff. Yeah, but writing that extra line, keeping it in the movie, when we totally got that he and his fictionalized version of Kazakhstan are very, very disrespectful towards women. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there are times where he exposes that in people in better ways. When he is talking to people about women writing books and women having smaller brains and that sort of thing. And seeing how people react to that. That is getting to his point. But mm-hmm. then just making fun of a woman.
For her looks.
Right.
Yeah.
I'm with you. It may feel like we're belaboring this point, but it is genuinely problematic because of how intentional everything else is.
Yeah.
Do you think any part of it is that he's trying to turn the lens on the audience?
Well, that's what I was wondering. I feel like there's a lot of parallels to my line of thinking when I watch Borat and when I watch a Quentin Tarantino movie, strangely, where possibly what we're getting is a provocative sort of presentation of something that's going to force you to reckon with what you actually think is funny, in the same way that Quentin Tarantino, at least for me, would force me to reckon with what I'm okay with as far as violence.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe there's a case for that. Maybe there is. I do think that I am okay with having my buttons pushed. I'll put it that way.
Mm-hmm.
Like there are certainly, and actually it probably at this point now it didn't bother me as much, but I get that with like the hotel scene of, you know, wrestling
where
around.
They fight, yeah.
Right. I mean, that is definitely trying to force you to confront. I mean, if you had any sort of discomfort with male nudity or
movie
male
went
on
too
male
far here. How's this for too far?
Right. I'm okay with that.
Yeah.
I got problem with that.
I am too.
Even though it makes you uncomfortable. That's the point.
Right.
The point is for you to be uncomfortable.
Mm-hmm. I want to say about that nude wrestling scene, I think there's a moment in the elevator where Sacha Baron Cohen almost breaks.
Yes, I think so too.
Did you see that?
There's
just
a moment.
About.
Yeah. And actually, I think if I remember correctly, I think the camera kind of zooms away really quick out the door.
No, it turns to this to show the audience that there's still one more person on the elevator, and then follows him out the door. Yeah,
as adolescent as that joke kind of is, I still laugh so hard.
The elevator,
the whole
scene,
whole
fight,
the whole scene.
Yeah, it's pretty.
Should I be ashamed of that or not? I don't know.
No. It is funny. But I think it's funniest at the elevator.
Yeah, but the guy that's just. And then it goes up one more floor and he just walks out.
He's like, I'm not getting off. It's not my floor. And he just is not happy.
But I also read, here's an interesting thing. Let's talk about that scene for a little bit, because is it just that I'm being sensitive about certain things? Like, am I being sensitive about the women issue? Because I also read where people were offended by that scene who had weight problems because they felt like that scene was making,
the
joke was that he was fat. Is it just different for different people?
Well, and then for me,
I worked in special ed for 5 years, and the joke I wrote down as just a provocative joke is when he talks about his sister taunting his retarded brother.
Yeah.
And I was like, I don't know what this is doing. So yeah, that's something for me. People with disabilities aren't a joke. Like, that's not a joke, really. So you're right. Yeah. I mean, I can understand people who would have different viewpoints being offended by certain things that aren't problems. Racist saying like, well, I don't think we should be depicted that way. I'm like, well.
Well, here's the thing I want to say about that. I remember when Borat came out, some people maybe thought it was unfair because they felt like he was picking on maybe some more fringe elements of American society, whether it was like the church scene. By the way, that's a great scene too.
Yeah. Well,
the church scene.
I wanted to talk about scary scenes.
Okay. Yes. Yes.
We can get into that too, but let's talk about this fringe element.
So you've got that. You've also got the, that gets back to the Bobby Rowe, the rodeo manager character. Like, is he just picking out people who he knows are going to have these fanatical points of view as a way to caricaturize what America is for a joke?
Right.
And I think what we are seeing in this political climate, because I just listened to an On the Media episode where they were doing a whole thing where they were showing clip by clip, sound bite, all these news media outlets asking, who are these people who support Donald Trump? I think Borat deserves a lot of credit for actually going into these areas that are not as fringe as we would like to believe.
Right.
And I'm not trying to say that those are all people who would support Donald Trump. They may or they might not be, but we do know. We do know statistically, for instance, that evangelicals are voting majority for Donald Trump. And so when you go to that church scene, Borat is showing you a church scene that most people are not familiar with, but is way more common than we would like to admit.
10 years ago, yeah.
10 years ago. Sacha Baron Cohen is also showing you 10 years ago a white demographic that existed in the Bush era that definitely feels marginalized at this point. Yeah. And so I want to just kind of throw out this idea of, like, was Borat doing a type of journalism that was needed? You know,
interesting.
This idea that, like, he was going into an America that, for whatever reason, our mainstream media just could not capture over the last 10 years. And now we're seeing it. Types of people that Sacha Baron Cohen was actually interacting with for comedic effect.
Yeah.
But interacting with nonetheless, and not always making to look like idiots, honestly. We should get into that church scene a little bit. And actually showing you, you know what, this is America. And I remember when it came out, people were saying, well, he's just showing a side of America that's just not very pretty. I'm sorry, but that's America. What he's showing is more America than people want to admit.
Yeah.
And now we're seeing it statistically with what we're seeing with the GOP not knowing what to do with their own party, you know?
Yeah, and I mean, I remember people saying at the time, like, how many places did he have to visit before he got these interviews?
Probably not many.
Not many, I'm guessing. I mean, you look at the guy who punched the protester at the Trump rally.
Yeah.
Saying willingly to any camera that's there, next time I'm going to kill him. You're right. It's interesting to call it a form of journalism because
It might be a stretch.
Well, but I mean, it's.
I don't think.
I mean, I can see somebody thinking that's a little, you know, over the top. But I think you're right in that it is reporting on a reality, and reporters will do what they can to speak honestly. Sometimes you'll see a reporter not showing whether they agree or disagree.
Right.
So that's a form of what he's doing. He's just sort of saying things, not in the form of a question, in the form of a statement, and the people have to agree or disagree. Now, on that topic, sort of, there were a couple scenes that scared me, and I don't know if you felt the same thing. Maybe you weren't, you wouldn't describe it as being scared. The frat boy scene was one, because that's not a fringe element either.
No, you're right.
The mindset's scary enough when he says he doesn't have respect for women, that there's no women worth it. But even more scary is that they don't believe that they have privilege, that they feel like victims.
And that minorities actually get all the special treatment.
Yeah.
And get everything handed to them in society. I mean, these are like talking points at this point.
Yeah.
For a certain segment of our population in the political climate that we're in right now.
Yes.
All you're seeing right now in our politics is what Borat was depicting bubbling to the surface, really.
And then the other thing that scared me was the politicians at that church meeting. There's a congressman and then there's a state Supreme Court justice who speak at this thing. And the Supreme Court justice, whose job is to interpret laws based on the Constitution,
mm-hmm.
talks about America being a Christian nation. It's been a Christian nation. It is a Christian nation. It will always be a Christian nation until the good Lord returns. Like, the idea that these are the people that aren't thinking about the law, really, about the law of the land.
Right.
And it's easy to say they wouldn't think about people outside their belief system.
Yeah.
And that scene alone should be evidence that he didn't seek fringe elements. He didn't go, like,
right. He didn't go to
some tiny place where, like, this guy is trying to make his yard an autonomous country. Like, he went to a place where there are elected officials
yeah.
speaking publicly.
Yeah.
And just exposing, like, this blatant bias.
That church scene is shot relatively objectively.
Yeah.
There's cuts, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's things they're not showing you. But what's interesting is that Borat in those scenes acts incredibly neutral.
He just stands there.
He just stands there and takes it in.
Uh-huh.
The work the camera is doing in those moments, it's usually either pretty far back.
Yeah.
Once in a while, you'll get maybe a person dancing or jumping up at the front of the stage. And if you laugh at that, that's your deal with the church.
Sure,
that
yeah.
is not the camera telling you to laugh at that.
Right.
You know, it's barely even drawing attention to it. It's basically, it is a very objective stance, I believe, that scene takes.
Mm-hmm.
And it definitely pulls the comedy out when they bring him up. And mm-hmm. it's actually pretty safe comedy.
It is.
Is there anybody who can help me?
Yes.
The one that can help you is who we preached about tonight.
Jesus.
Do what Jesus like me.
Absolutely, Jesus loves you.
Do what Jesus like my sons.
Jesus loves your sons.
Do Jesus love my retired brother Bilo?
He loves your brother Bilo.
Do what Jesus love my neighbor Nusultan Tulyakbai?
Yes, he loves everybody.
Nobody love my neighbor Nusultan Tulyakbai. Can Jesus heal the pain that is in my heart?
Jesus can heal your pain in your heart.
Make him heal the pain that is in my heart.
Lift your hands and begin to worship.
Because,
again, yeah,
it's not, he's not insulting their beliefs at all.
He's not. I mean, I suppose you could say his involvement with it at all is making fun of the beliefs. But really,
that you would only say that if you believed this was a very fringe element of society.
Right.
And I think what we're trying to say is, mm-hmm. no, this is,
mm-hmm.
If you don't want to believe it, that's up to you. But this is more mainstream than you think. The Pentecostal movement, which is what this church was from.
Right.
I mean, that is a very predominant movement in America.
Yeah,
church movement.
Absolutely.
You know?
Absolutely. Let's talk about, I think, the one person who in the movie is...
The person we wish we could all be.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. The driving instructor. When Borat goes to take driving lessons because he needs to drive. And again, the energy in the scene is insane because he's behind the wheel of a car and you don't know what he's going to do.
And the guy keeps reaching for the wheel because he's like, nope.
But this guy, I feel like they almost left him in the movie because the scene's not super important. The scene's funny, but I think... he handles being with Borat better than anybody else, and they almost leave it in as to just kind of give this guy a round of applause.
Yeah. Like,
watch the children.
Okay, no problem.
You must not hit the children.
Look, there is a woman in a car. Can we follow her and maybe make a sexy time with her?
No.
Why not?
Because a woman has a right to choose who she has sex with.
What?
How about that? Isn't that amazing?
You joke?
There must be consent. How about that? That's good, huh?
It's not good for me.
Oh, it is good.
Here's the car.
Okay. You want everything?
You can't.
And then later, Borat asks, you know, I like you, do you like me? Are you my friend? And the guy says, yeah, you're a nice guy and I'm your friend. And Borat says, will you be my boyfriend? And he said, no, I won't be your boyfriend. And Borat says, why not? And he's like, well, okay, sure, I'll be your boyfriend. Like, he just kind of, he knows...
He rolls with it,
yeah.
Honestly, but he has so much integrity. You can tell
mm-hmm.
That he knows when someone needs to be corrected.
Right.
It's almost it's a masterful skill the driver's ed instructor has, where he can be, he can speak up for certain things in a way where I feel like even Sacha Baron Cohen, I think eventually he probably just realizes he can't make this guy look like an idiot.
Yeah.
He can't do anything
without crashing the car, without doing something totally extreme.
I think part of that was like, we got to show this guy because he's just, you know, he knows how to handle the situation. But I also think there's an element of that where it's like, if you're ever in a situation with someone like this,
here's how you can handle
There's a way to act.
Yeah.
And there's a way where you can still be true to yourself and be polite.
Yeah.
Like, you don't have to be a dick.
Yeah.
But you can still stand up for what you believe in, and or at least what needs to be said at the right time.
It's almost a control to the experiment too. Because it's like, this is what everybody else could have said.
Right.
Everybody else had the opportunity
to
tell him his racism was wrong, tell him his sexism was wrong.
I think you're absolutely right. It's probably very important that that's one of the earliest sketches in the movie.
As soon as he makes so many other people uncomfortable, they get threatened. And that's what's sort of telling. So has our conversation, I don't want to say, I don't want to downplay the problem elements, because I do think you're right. Those are pretty glaring problems.
They were glaring, but admittedly, they were few.
Yeah, and they're brief. Yeah. I think maybe three that we talked about. For us, there may be more for other people, which is totally valid. Do you think we'll stick with the label journalistic contribution that the movie makes? Do you think that would bump your rating up at all?
I feel like talking through a lot of the scenes piece by piece has once again, even after the WTF interview, sort of reminded me of what really is incredible about what's going on in this movie.
Mm-hmm.
I think I'm willing to bump it back up to my original four star. I think I might be able to. I don't know. It's just weird. It's not a movie that lends itself easily to these kinds of, you know, ultimate verdicts.
Because
you know?
You're right. Certain scenes, 5 stars. The smartness behind it is probably like 4.5, 5 stars too. But then there's just other parts that are like 2 stars if we had to like do it that way.
Which right.
is kind of a weird thing to say.
Maybe I'll just settle on 3.5 and call it a day.
I might too.
We best buds?
Yeah, we're best buds. Yeah. I think so.
I think this is a good place to end it, obviously.
Sure.
But
near the end.
Normally, this is where we would talk about our next episode of Can We Still Be Friends?
Yeah.
But we've got some, you know, external situations that are sort of making us approach it a little differently this time around. You want to maybe explain, Ryan?
Yeah, I'll explain. For one thing, there's something, a possibility that's up in the air that if that works out, that'd be great, which we're not going to talk about because if it doesn't work out, then we feel like idiots.
Right.
But the main thing is that my wife is due to have a baby on April 11th, and that boy could come any point between now and then.
That he does not care about our schedule whatsoever.
At this point, it doesn't seem like it, and it concerns me as a father.
Right.
Well,
you know,
I will have words with him if he comes early.
I think it's just important that you discipline.
Yeah.
But we know how babies can be.
Yeah. I mean, I teach high schoolers, so I'm fully aware of the sense of entitlement in the youth.
Mm-hmm. The millennial. They like to be called millennials.
Actually, they're not millennials anymore.
What are they? They like to be called them.
We don't have a name yet.
Oh.
Millennials are like 18-year-olds right now.
Oh.
Yeah.
Shows what I know.
Right.
Post-millennials?
That's probably what they're going by.
That's stupid.
# generation.
For the generation that's not even on Twitter.
So
wow, that's a okay
rabbit trail.
Yeah.
So we're not going to pick a movie because we don't know it. Like, let's say we pick a movie based on some upcoming movie or something, and then it's like we don't record for another month. So what we're gonna do is we're gonna cross that bridge when we get to it. When my son gets here and we see how things go, then we will be back in the studio and we'll put something out on Twitter, Facebook, website, all that stuff, telling you guys what our next movie is going to be once we figure it out. But at this point, we don't feel comfortable saying.
So definitely, that's another reason why you should be following us on Facebook or on Twitter, because you'll be in the loop when we do decide what our next film's going to be. So be sure to do that.
Mm-hmm. Also, while you're on Twitter and Facebook and our website, leave us a comment about Borat, about any of the other movies we've done. If your episode's behind, that's totally fine. We still love hearing from people.
If you do feel like leaving us a message, you can always email us feedback@canwestillbefriends.net. And just throwing this out there once again, we do have a voicemail box that you can call and leave us a message if you'd like. The phone number is 847-306-9532. So since we're not unveiling our next movie, and it actually could be a while before our next episode, just want to recommend that you don't unsubscribe from us. As long as you stay subscribed, you will get that new episode when it does come.
Good point.
So just hang in there with us, all right? So we might be taking a little bit of a break, but we will be back. I promise you that.
All right. Well, thanks for listening.
Yeah, thanks. Hope you enjoyed our conversation. We'll see you next time.